Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by Bet Online. All things NFL Week 15, what we saw, what we learned, what we noticed. Start to look ahead to NFL Week 16, with some of the games and the playoff picture really starting to take shape. A little bit of a special show, Payne. Look ahead lines, the American Gaming Association big game breakdown, Panthers at Washington this evening for Monday Night Football. Maybe some potential ideas to buy the gambler in your life that special something as we get ever so close to the Christmas holiday.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think there's a bigger thing. Do you know what today is?
Today is December 19th, all day as far as I know.
2016, right?
Yep, 2016 for people on Earth.
There's actually a milestone today. Do you know what that is?
A milestone. Are we talking a sports milestone? Are we talking a pain lifestyle milestone? Are we talking about a milestone in my life that I should know about? You know what? Give me a little bit of a clue and some direction here.
I would hope you would know. It involves the podcast.
Is this like our 100th show?
There you go.
Look at us.
100th episode.
Who thought when we hatched this idea a couple of years ago and we wanted to kill a little bit of time and feel like we could bring a product that added some value to the betting marketplace, we would last 100 episodes? I probably would have bet that under, to be honest.
Yeah, probably so. Especially, you know, I don't think they know what I have to deal with here, so I definitely would have went under having that inside information of knowing what it is dealing with you twice a week. So definitely would have bet under.
You should count your lucky stars. You get to deal with me twice a week. I mean, that's kind of like a blessing. Whether or not you choose to see it as such, I mean, that's more or less how I feel about it.
Anyways, so thank you to the loyal listeners. And as a thank you, by the time you hear this, there will be a 100th episode contest posted on Twitter, on the @BetTheBoard Twitter feed, and it's pretty simple. The winner is going to receive three things. The first one, cash. $100 cash. The second thing you'll win is a 100-second Skype phone call with Todd and me. You can ask anything. Favorite holiday drinks, what movies we should see, gambling questions. 100 seconds with Todd and myself on a Skype call. And the third thing you will win is a Bet the Board shirt of your choosing and an additional free gift. The Monday Night Football contest is pretty simple. It's a pick three. You're going to pick Panthers skins against the spread. You're going to pick the over-under, and you are going to pick the running back or wide receiver with the most total scrimmage yards and how many. It's that simple. There's two rules. You actually have to follow Bet the Board Pod on Twitter, and you have to retweet the contest. It'll be pinned at the top of the @BetTheBoard Twitter feed. Very simple.
Look at this. These are the kind of contests you come up with. And for the listeners who may or may not believe this, you didn't, fill me in on any of these details before we came on to actually record this podcast.
We had a conversation last week, and this is going to make me sound bad, but the reality is, and we joke about this all the time, if I cared to really sell information, it would be game over for the rest of the industry, because it's really like, when it comes to the social stuff, I try not to really get involved with that. But if we did, if we had ideas like this, it would be game over.
Well, I mean, here's one thing. I'm going to go, we love to laud our listeners and we appreciate them listening every week. But, Payne, I have to say one thing. Guys, you have to be able to follow directions to be successful in this business. If you're going to try and handicap and look at numbers and do your reading, please, and I beg of you, please, read the entire blog post. We posted the game yesterday, first half, Lions and Giants got you to the window with relative ease. But top of the post, bottom of the post, it was in the post. I got an inordinate amount of questions, and we love each and every one of you goofy bastards out there. But please, please follow directions. When we say the thing is posted, it's up there, and we try to make it a little bit easier so it would pop up right above screen level on your mobile device. You had adequate time to get down in that game. And Payne, I will say one thing. That might be the first time or one of the first times this season where we gave out a play and the number moved against us. If folks were late to the party, they actually had a chance to go under 21.5 instead of under 20.5.
Yes. And so a few things about that. We initially post the pick or best bet at the bottom of the page. And then I said, I see everybody asking. So I moved it to the top so it would literally show on the homepage of the site. So it's very simple. There's three goddamn buttons on the entire website. There's a podcast page.
You can't say goddamn on the air.
There's a podcast page. There's a blog page. And there's a page to get gambling gear. That is it. You have to click the actual podcast and hit the button that says read more. And we actually give like a little spiel that we take time to write that kind of gives you a preview of the podcast, of what you'll be listening to. So typically at the bottom is when we will post that free pick or best bet if we don't give it out on the Thursday pod. But I slipped it to the top because so many were asking. And if you literally go to the homepage, the top podcast that's posted, it's embedded on that page now since I moved it to the top. You didn't even have to click the damn read more button.
Well, and you know what, Payne? Since we're in a giving mood, not only do we have a contest today for our 100th episode, we've forged an exclusive industry partnership that I think a lot of our listeners should take full advantage. We talk all the time on this podcast. We know we're sponsored by BetOnline, but we always encourage people to explore other routes and give themselves an opportunity to get the best of the number with an exclusive odds provider with one of my former employers, Don Best. They wanted to try and give something special to the sports bettor out there right around the holidays and encourage folks to go to donbest.com. On the left-hand side of the screen, you can click mobile odds. What they have is a platform for all iPhone and Android users that'll have lines, real-time or on a slight delay, from all the biggest books, both offshore and Vegas, real-time scoring updates, injury updates, right to your mobile phone. So if you're out doing your holiday shopping, you're in the mall and you can't be, you know, by a screen, you want to make sure you get the best of it, boom, you pull up the app and we'll send out some screenshots on my Twitter feed, Payne's Twitter feed, and of course the Bet the Board. Depending on your budget, you have a gold and platinum option. And one thing on top of that, whatever membership you sign up for, we're going to give you 1 month of free access. And all you have to do to get your 1 month of free access, tweet to Bet the Board. Once you've signed up, you've gone through all the instructions on the Don Best website, and boom, we'll add 1 month to you. We're working to try and get you a little bit more of extended stay. But Payne, it's the perfect opportunity as we go through bowls and the remainder of the NFL season to make sure people can lock in the best number. I know you and I live by the odd screen. We have the desktop version, and I don't think there's a more helpful tool for any sports bettor out there.
No, absolutely not. And I think for our listeners, one thing they say, like, oh man, they're pushing a lot of product. They're doing. I'll tell you right now, I'm a pretty straight shooter. I don't do anything that I don't feel like doing. And that's just the reality of the situation.
That's no bullshit. It's tough enough to get you on this podcast twice a week.
And that's just the reality of the situation. So there's like three things that are vital to me in life. It's Tito's vodka, it's my green juice, and it's the Don Best screen. So
And smart water.
That's accurate. Smart water. There's like four things that I just absolutely use every single day. So my Don Best desktop odd screen is literally on 24 hours, 7 days a week. It just doesn't turn off. It just stays on. And it's, you know, there's a lot of other competing stuff out there. I'm going to tell you firsthand, it's not close.
The other stuff works, but if you want to be serious about this, even if you're a recreational bettor and you may play $100 a game, making the investment for $50 to get real-time odds right to your mobile phone is absolutely invaluable. As we saw, Payne, over the weekend, there was no reason for folks that were betting a game like the Chargers and Raiders. If you liked the underdog, you had to take three, even if you needed to lay $1.20. And there was no reason to take 2.5 if you liked the dog, or to lay three if you liked the favorite. If you can shop around and take full advantage, you have to put a little bit of money back into this craft if you want to be successful long term.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And can I say something about that game? Did Mike McCoy basically just quit?
Well, that's, you know what?
What was
it's
he
funny
doing?
That you have that, and we were going to transition into the recap for the weekend, and that provides us the perfect segue. You know what? There was a lot of speculation. I watched that game in its entirety. I had a ticket and a game that I talked about at great lengths on radio with the Chargers plus three there. They said they were out of timeouts with about 6.5 minutes to go when Phillip Rivers takes a timeout. Now, the graphics late in the game, I'm guessing this is what you're referring to, by the way. The graphics late in the game show that the Chargers had one timeout left. I honestly don't know if they had a timeout left, if TV was wrong, if McCoy was wrong. But assuming that's the point you wanted to get after, yeah, they could have forced Oakland to kick a field goal and get the ball back.
I mean, you would know better than I would. I watch these games on mute because I don't want to be poisoned, my brain. I don't want pollution in it listening to many of the broadcasters. I kind of want to just view it by myself without influence. And so, yes, the graphic said one timeout. Now, granted, it would have been a long shot. They would have had about 16 seconds left, down six, and you would have had an opportunity. My feeling is McCoy would have used that opportunity. I mean, your job is on the line. Anything can kind of happen. So that was interesting to me. I know a lot of the sharp guys preferred the method that he employed closing out that game, you know, at least getting a push.
That makes two of us, and the fact that Josh Lambeau will not be getting any Christmas cards from me, maybe some coal in his stocking for missing the extra point for a game that very easily could have ended 19-17.
Yeah, there's really, you don't need to break that game down. It's very simple. There's one team that has consistently lost games in that manner, and there's one team that's consistently won games in that manner all season long, and they squared off on Sunday, and you saw exactly what those two teams looked like in the fourth quarter. Chiefs continue to puke on themselves. The Raiders continue to win games late that they probably shouldn't otherwise.
It's amazing. You can invent ways to lose in this league. We talk about it all the time. Some teams know how to execute in late game situations. Others do not. We'll get to the Jacksonville Jaguars and the way that they couldn't execute to close out a potential win, ultimately costing their head coach's job. But Payne, let's start with what we saw most recently, and that was a Sunday night game between the Bucs and the Cowboys. We talked about it on Thursday. We said there was going to be some sharp money that came on the Bucs. Sure enough, it hit the market. You had a chance to lay 6.5. I don't think it got down to 6 when I looked at the numbers. But Dallas gets out to a commanding lead early. They march the ball up and down the field. We see that offensive balance from Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott. Ultimately, Dallas wins the game 26-20, stays under the total, which also saw some sharp money over. But I dig into that box score. Do we give Tampa credit for keeping that game close despite losing the turnover battle? Or is Dallas fully back and we have reasons to be concerned because they weren't able to run away and hide from what I see as a middling NFC team despite the recent win streak Tampa was on?
Man, it was one of the more interesting games to view. There was sharp money on the Bucs, just kind of a number grab there. For me, Dallas kind of had a little mental lapse. When your key cogs and Zeke and Dak are young, kind of got away from themselves late second quarter to start the third quarter. You get a nice tip, I should say, to Humphreys to score that touchdown to really make it close. But box to wire, it was pretty dominant performance from the Cowboys. And we talked about certain things that this Buccaneers team, yes, a nice defensive resurgence of late. But through that five-game win streak, they're the beneficiary of 14 turnovers. And that's just not going to last. They had issues with the ground game, stopping the run, and we saw that. It was pretty evident. Zeke, McFadden, Dak combined averaged 6.3 yards a carry. So they were in control of that game. I will say this. During the crucial stage of the Bucs comeback, late second quarter, beginning of third quarter, Dallas got away from themselves. I get that Dak was fantastic, he was accurate, but this needs to be a run-first team. And so it was one of those games that I talk about all the time where you can have a team that's up maybe 4 points and you feel like they're never going to lose to the game because they're in control, they're controlling tempo, it's to their liking. Dallas got up in that game 17-6 and you're like, this isn't close to over. You just felt like it wasn't close to over because got a little too pass happy there.
Well, I think, and we've talked about it all the time, not only this year about the Cowboys, but 2 years ago when they had their run. Dallas, defensively, they don't have enough depth or playmakers that if they're not running the ball effectively, taking 5 to 6 minutes a drive, you saw them susceptible to Tampa's changing pace and tempo. The Bucs were able to hit the big play. And Dallas, very methodical working down the field. But again, early in the game, they had some costly holding penalties when they started to enter the green zone. And I think that ultimately, for me, limits Dallas's upside. Maybe it's with Dak in there. You know, he dink and dunked his way, did what was asked of him. But ultimately, I think that's where Dallas has a ceiling that some of these other teams don't have. Because as we saw in Green Bay at Soldier Field, Aaron Rodgers gets them down the field with one flick of the wrist. I don't think the Cowboys have this big play potential in them. And when you need so many things to go right over a 10 to 12 play drive, you leave yourself vulnerable to a drive stalling, a costly penalty, and from what you thought was going to be 6 points becomes 3, and maybe ultimately a missed field goal that'll get you knocked out of the playoffs.
Ball control is key. And I think a lot of people were like, you can't draft Zeke at 4. But drafting him at 4 for this specific team was not just about the offense, but about helping that defense. And that's why drafting him at four made sense for this specific team. It wouldn't have made sense for many other teams. Rod Marinelli's working wonders with what he has talent-wise, and he's able to rotate a ton of guys in and out. It's almost like a basketball team that likes to press and play up-tempo, and they do these literally hockey-like line changes, five in at a time, five out at a time. He wants his defense to be fresh. He wants them to be flying around. It's a very... there's not much complexity to his defense. It's very simple. So when you can go up-tempo, not allow them to sub in and out and get fresh bodies, they're really not that very good of a defense. We've seen they're trending downwards in all the efficiency metrics. But the key is to keep them refreshed, keep them off the field, play ball control, keep the opponent's offense out of rhythm. And that wasn't the case there when they got a little pass happy middle of the second quarter through about the middle of the third quarter.
Yeah, and it is worth noting, too, Dallas was down a little bit of defensive depth in that game. Not, you know, household names, but they were down some of the guys you talk about in the rotation. And you sent me an interesting text last night during the game, and I think it's a great question that the casual fan goes, oh, you guys are nuts and idiots. But is Zeke Elliott an elite-level running back already, or is he made by the offensive line? I'm not going to take anything away from his accomplishments, given how much struggles we saw last year from Dallas, whether it was Joseph Randle or the cast of characters that tried to run the football. But how many running backs could you insert back there and do what Zeke's doing? Or is he entirely in a class of his own right now?
Zeke is fantastic. He's a good back. His patience isn't always there. He doesn't always pick the right hole. He hasn't been overly elusive in terms of breaking tackles, but he does so much. He was fantastic yesterday. He's been fantastic this year out of the backfield catching passes. He has been phenomenal. I mean, we knew this in Ohio State. Was a great blocker. So he's been fantastic to giving Dak a little extra time there, helping the offensive line when it, on the few rare occasions, it does break down. So he's fantastic with a lot of those other things. But I will tell you this, he wears on a defense. He does not fear contact. We saw that in the preseason when literally he's searching out Cam Chancellor in that preseason game. So he gets better as the game goes on. He wears that defense down. The offensive line wears on you. That's been the biggest factor. I just think you need more ground game. And now you get McFadden back. Yes, he's old. He gets dinged up. But he's got to be healthy. I mean, he's got to play what? His season comes down to potentially, you know, 4 to 6 games. So having him as a backup back, I mean, this has to be a full-blown running attack, and you pass off of that.
And one last thing on that, I have to imagine that NFL GMs around the league taking notice when you look at the talented trio of backs that most likely will go in the first round of the entry draft coming up, whether it's Leonard Fournette, Dalvin Cook, or Christian McCaffrey. I think those guys may see their stock climb knowing what Zeke Elliott's been able to do for Dallas and how important he's been to this Cowboys resurgence. Within the NFC East, Payne, we saw the Giants continue to win and win ugly, taking care of business against the Detroit Lions and covering the number in the process, a game that we were very happy to see start slowly with two offenses trying to get their feet under them. Detroit now backed into a bit of a corner. They'll play Dallas on Monday Night Football, but win or lose, it looks like Detroit's going to need to beat the Green Bay Packers, assuming the Packers hold serve themselves, to win the NFC North. The Giants now need a little bit of help, but still an outside chance to win the NFC East, I think very much in as a wild card team in the conference.
Yeah, a few things to that game. One, in terms of our total and why it moved, I think there's a good discussion here. First of all, this total opened 44, and there was a slew of sharp money early in the week. Now, I know a lot of people say, you know, that's not sharp money. But there is this thought process now of I'd rather have some than none and lose a key number like 44. So that was the reality. Opens 44. It gets absolutely hammered early Tuesday by some of the sharpest guys in the world. And so when the market does open for the first half, it's using the market indicator algorithm of 41, 40 and a half. And that's why you saw it open 20 and a half, get sent down to as low as 20. And then there was no weather that came in. None. There was a little light rain, but it wasn't as cold as people thought. The front that came in was actually a warm weather front. We saw that Saturday night when everyone thought, you know, cold weather for the Dolphins. Wasn't the case. So we saw buyback from a lot of the sharp groups that went under 44. A lot of it predicated on weather. We saw that get back up to 42 and a half, some 43. And you know this, you sat behind the counter. Yes, some sharp money, but it's also an algorithm, first half, to first half, and that's why we saw full game to first half, and that's why we saw that tick up a little bit. So there was added opportunity there for our listeners. But I'll tell you this, part of that handicap to that game was not only Matthew Stafford in the finger, but he was without his center once again. And that offense without Theo Riddick, that matchup they no longer have. It's a fantastic matchup when you can get a running back out of the backfield on a linebacker or safety. It's a nightmare matchup. And without Theo Riddick, that offense doesn't have that great matchup. The other thing to this was, and I know a lot of people ran to the Lions, it became that public dog. This was their first outdoor game since week four. It's actually their first and last outdoor game since week four.
Pretty crazy that you're able to go through an NFL schedule playing your games in the NFC North and now have that luxury.
Yeah. I mean, you looked at their road games. It was Texans, Vikings, Saints, and that was their road games. They played the rest at home, obviously, in a dome. Those were all in enclosed situations. Week four, they played at the Bears. Week before that, they played at the Packers. Didn't fare very well outdoors. So that was something that you absolutely had to factor into the equation this week, and I don't think a lot of people did.
No, it definitely wasn't the case. And then you see Matthew Stafford have a chance for a potential backdoor late, throwing the ball into the end zone ill-advised when a field goal would have gotten them within one score, ultimately coming up on the short end of the stick. But from another game that was played outside in the elements, the Titans, with a pretty impressive victory, gutting out a 19-17 win over the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead. And one of our loyal listeners, Payne, and it feeds right into this, at RS Reigns on Twitter, wanted to ask point blank, have the Titans turned the corner winning this kind of football game in hostile territory?
Yeah. I mean, these are organization-defining wins. We saw one Saturday night with the Dolphins. You need to get over the hump, and you can tell how much they've grown because there was other situations throughout the course of the season where they needed to get the monkey off their back, so to speak, and couldn't do it. At home to the Colts earlier in the season, where I believe they needed that win to get above 500, couldn't quite do it. So you see them winning games. But on the flip side of that, this is a Chiefs team we've been talking about, and this is the kind of team that really creates value in the market. Now, we saw them beat an Oakland team, cover against an Oakland team that might have more perception in the market. But when you really break this Chiefs team down, they've played six good quarters the last 7 weeks, and they're stockpiling those wins, and that's what the casual fan looks at. So the market is going to stay plump, so to speak. But when you dig into the box scores, they're not winning any of those games. They're not. And you look at this game, this is a Titan secondary that pretty much any offense with a pulse has been able to attack that secondary. And the Chiefs couldn't do it. Alex Smith, 15 for 28. He throws for 163 yards, less than 6 yards per pass attempt. Just couldn't get it going. And the Titans, again, they kind of controlled the pace of that game a little bit. They got the ground game going. We talked about that. Chiefs cannot stop the run. Derek Johnson now out in the middle. There was a nice void there over the middle, in the middle of that field with the ground game. Delanie Walker had 6 catches, the big one late to get them in field goal range. Without Derek Johnson in the middle of that field, it's going to be tough for the Chiefs defense.
Yeah, and this week, a fascinating game now. Denver basically on life support. They'll go into Arrowhead, and you look at how that first meeting between those two teams ended. Be interested to get your thoughts there, whether they come today on the podcast or Thursday, and we break that game down in greater detail. And before we officially close the book on everything we've seen thus far in NFL Week 15, kind of a potpourri rapid fire for you, Payne. Wanted to get your thoughts on the Gus Bradley firing, the quarterback situation we're seeing unfold in Houston between Brock Osweiler and Tom Savage.
The first thing is tough seeing Gus Bradley go because he's a good guy. And when you get into kind of some coaching circles, it is one of the most shadiest industries you can ever be a part of.
Even worse than ours?
100 times wow. Worse, especially when you talk about the college level in recruiting, the stuff that goes on. It's just brutal. So he was actually a decent guy. But the reality is you can't go 14-48 straight up. And looking at this now, 22-36-4 against the spread for our world, it just doesn't get it done in any sports fashion. Your young quarterback has regressed. Bortles is bad, and that's kind of a collective effort. It's on him. It's on the coaching. And why it's sad is you start to see Gus Bradley, his defense took a next step. This was the first year his defense was in the top half of efficiency. And you have to mirror your coach. You have to take on the personality of your coach. Whatever your coach is, offensive-minded, defensive-minded, that needs to be the strength of the team. It hadn't been in previous years, but they were kind of ascending in that direction with a lot of young talent through the draft. And so this right now, as it stands, their defense was in the top half of efficiency. So tough to see that going. They thought if he was able to compile a few more wins, they might retain him for one more season and say, listen, we are going to pick an offensive mind for you. But when you drop a game like that, when you blow a game like that to Tom Savage, tough to retain your job. Listen, Brock Osweiler transitioning to him, he's not very good. Kind of the reality of the situation. Savage came in, I get it was against the Jaguars, but showed some poise, showed some promise. We know he's got the big arm. Can he be accurate is the question. I don't know who they're picking this week. It sounded like they were going back to Brock, right?
I think they're going back to Brock, and they cited basically the money they have invested in Osweiler as the primary reason for a game that, you know, pretty big. Prime time, Christmas Eve, the Cincinnati Bengals come a-calling, and it looks like the Bengals will have A.J. Green back, barring a setback this week in practice.
And this is going to be something interesting to monitor if you're a Texans fan or an AFC South fan. What happens with Bill O'Brien? Because it's been clear O'Brien never met Osweiler. It was the ownership, it was the GM that said, listen, we're watching what's that quarterback on the field for the last few years. We got to get a goddamn quarterback. And so they facilitated this Brock Osweiler relationship, spent the money on him, got him. O'Brien, what is he going to say when your organization wants to spend and upgrade a position or a thinking that it was an upgrade at the position? He's going to say, sure, yeah, go spend money. Help me out. Help me keep my job. But they never met. He never met Osweiler before the signing. It was a very odd situation. This was one where ownership stepped in, said, we're going to spend the money. We're going to get your quarterback. So right now, him going to Savage was a him thing in-game. My feeling is he's being directed that Osweiler needs another crack at this from the organization.
Yeah, and the question is, will it ultimately be what keeps Houston on the outside looking in? We've talked about the Titans on the ascent, and those two teams will meet up in Week 17. So we will see exactly how things fare there. The Titans on the road at Jacksonville this week, still very much in control of their own destiny. And one last thing, Payne, we go from a glass half empty with those two teams to a glass half full with a trio of sides that are playing their best football right when they need to. The Packers, they gutted out a victory against the Bears. We knew there was going to be sharp money on Chicago. Green Bay gets the win, but not the cover. New England goes into Denver, gets that Broncos monkey off their back, so to speak. And the Atlanta Falcons, they just keep going out there and boat racing team. They're not beating the elite of the NFL.
Yeah, so just quick thoughts. Packers obviously getting their offense together over the last few weeks. And this is going to sound odd, but kind of the battle internally between head coach and quarterback in Green Bay was Rodgers likes to reinvent the wheel. And now that he's without some of his wheels, he's got a calf strain, a hamstring pull, he's not able to kind of get around as easily and navigate from the game plan. He's finding the quick pass, and it's really been beneficial to this offense. Obviously, Jordy Nelson getting healthier. We know it takes time off the ACL. Yes, you can come back 9 to 12 months, but kind of having that mental confidence that you can cut and go really helps things. So that's an added dimension. They did get some ground help with Montgomery and Christian Michael, so that's going to be an added benefit. The defense still not great, so this is going to be an Aaron Rodgers thing. As we transition a little bit to the Patriots, everybody had question marks about them. Then all of a sudden, the last 2 weeks, they rise to the occasion. And I think that game was a perfect example. And I'll be honest, we ended up putting the Broncos in a teaser because the information was that strong. I said, I can't be on the sidelines here without a little nibble on the Broncos. But mentally, I told you there were... Yeah. I had some reservations about that game.
This week, I know with some holiday congestion and a adjusted sports schedule with bowl games and everything else, do you keep your eye on anything, or are we going to have to skip the movie review and come back and revisit it, you know, 2 weeks from now?
Maybe we can throw a little fan vote out there. Not sure I'm going to have time to go this week with the holidays, but maybe we can squeeze something in there. Maybe we just kind of... see something, and if we are able to catch it, we'll review it. But I think for sure we'll have we'll have something up there, you know, 2 weeks from now.
I mean, I definitely want to see the
I figure you're going to tell me it's
like Office Christmas Party or Why Him. I feel like that's what's coming as far as a lighter atmosphere in the theater.
Yeah, I'm not into the Office Christmas Party thing, but Why Him? Bryan Cranston, big fan of him. I know at this point it's kind of tough to take you seriously, and I know a lot of our listeners don't. It's because it's because you haven't seen Breaking Bad yet. It's tough to take a man who hasn't seen Breaking Bad yet seriously.
It's on the list of must-see TV once football season comes to an end and I go through some binge-watching phases amid all the grind that is college basketball. So Breaking Bad is there. I readily admit that I have not watched the series. I've only seen a couple of episodes here or there. I feel like I'm not doing justice to what many have called the best TV series since, what, Entourage and Boardwalk Empire and Sopranos, in that same family and classification.
So, you know, this summer, less page flipping and maybe a little more couch lounging, hitting the play button, yeah?
Yeah, I know my book reading bothers you quite a bit, but, you know,
it doesn't. I may actually read a book this summer.
Yeah, maybe one. We'll figure out. But, yeah.
I still haven't seen Sopranos either.
What's up? You have not seen The Sopranos?
No, you. I didn't think
no,
you
no,
had.
No. I've seen The Sopranos backwards and forwards, not once, but twice.
Okay,
so,
good.
So, yeah, I've seen all that. Let's pump the brakes a little bit and not try and drive the bus over me and then throw the thing in reverse here. So
what's the Ben Affleck movie coming up in the middle of January?
I
that
believe
looks
it's
good.
Live by Night. That's the one that you okay. That's the one you're talking about.
Yes, that's on the docket for
yeah,
sure.
That'll be a must see. And I feel like honestly, anyone who's been to the movies and probably not as much as you and I, we've seen trailers for the movie Passengers. I think in 75% of the movies that they've had on screen this fall. I know Jennifer Lawrence has been on the media circuit, Chris Pratt. I feel like that's a movie I'm going to feel obligated to go see just because I want to know what happens, and I'm going to be pissed after the $10 I spend watching that when nothing happens.
Is that like a sci-fi thing?
Yeah, it's another sci-fi movie.
Yeah, you're into that stuff.
Yeah, we'll check it out. I mean, I just feel like the trailers have done its job for marketing and advertising, and I'm going to get suckered into going to see it. So we'll figure that out, but as always, we'll keep you posted on the Bet the Board Twitter feed. You can always follow all things podcast-related at Bet the Board Pod. You can follow Payne on social media as well, at Payne Insider. You can follow me at Todd Furman, of course, our Thursday guest at Dave Mason, BOL. All sorts of great holiday specials there. And some of the book's perspective. And Payne, before we get to the look ahead lines, I did want to mention Mason used some vulgar language to describe how NFL Week 15 has gone. I know our listeners have no sympathy whatsoever for the way things have gone for the book, but not a good day, and you can follow that up with a good article that Matt Humans wrote. He writes for the Review Journal out here. I actually sent it out from my Twitter feed, talking about how for Las Vegas bookmakers, this was either a small loser or a major disaster in Week 15. And one thing, Payne, I know underdogs went 7-6, but I think a lot of folks lose sight of the fact that it depends what underdogs cover and get you to the window, if you're the house, to determine the overall financial health week in, week out.
There's no doubt about that. We see a team like the Jaguars cover, and you think, oh, books did okay. We saw the Bears in comeback fashion cover. But there's just not a ton of volume on a Jaguars game, so to speak. So you get the primetime losses. Those really start to add up and crush you. You got the public dog there with some sharp action on the Bucs. That just wasn't a very good game for them.
Here, Packers, Vikings, we know the implications for Green Bay, very much in control of their own destiny. We're looking at the Packers, a 7-point favorite at BetOnline, total 43.5. Look-ahead number for this particular contest had the Packers listed as 5-point favorites, but Minnesota, an inexplicable home loss with very much to play for over the Colts. You agree or disagree with some of the adjustment based as much on perception as reality?
Tough loss at home. That may cook the season, but if I know Zimmer, it's going to be an enthusiastic week of practice, I will say that. And you start to get the vibe that 7 could be a bit much here in a division game, in a rival game. I'll say this, though. What we saw early on in that game, and it was my initial issue, because I did lean over. There was some sharp money that went over early in the week. And then, once Adrian Peterson was announced in, we saw a very, very sharp wave of under money. And what I'll tell you is this. When you break down the Minnesota Vikings from this change in philosophy under Pat Shurmur, it was, we need to create more time for Sam Bradford. So they literally had Sam Bradford operating out of the shotgun at 75% of his snaps. To put that in perspective, the NFL average out of the shotgun is 60%. And so all of a sudden, you get Adrian Peterson in the fold, and you want to get him acclimated, and you want to give him a pat on the back for recovering earlier than he should have, and you want to kind of say, hey, this is our franchise guy. He's here for us. You want to start getting him acclimated to the offense. He doesn't like to run from the shotgun. He likes to run from the I formation. And so we saw early on in that game, there was kind of this onus or pressure on getting Adrian Peterson involved. And it just wasn't what the offense was doing from a scheme perspective the last month or so. And it really threw them out of rhythm early. The defense has shown signs of regression. They've thinned out a little bit. They've been on the field a ton over the last couple months. So we kind of saw everything unfold there as the perfect storm, and then just get boat raced.
Of course, Green Bay does have revenge for a game they lost on Sunday Night Football way back early in the season when Minnesota was amid that 5-0 start. New England playing host to the New York Football Jets. The Jets were beaten like a drum by your Dolphins on Saturday night. Look-ahead number for this game had the Patriots listed just under 2-touchdown threshold as 13.5-point favorites. Current price at BetOnline is ballooned to full field goal. We're looking at New England now, a 16.5-point favorite. Total in this game, 43.5.
I think Bryce Petty is okay after what might be the most devastating shot I've seen all football season between that sandwich with Wake and Sue. Apparently the chest is okay. 17, if it got there, that is just a very, very steep number for a division game, a rivalry game that the Jets have had great success in recent years covering a number. Patriots team that I believe clinched a first-round bye, they absolutely did, now just playing for that number one overall seed. Clearly Belichick isn't going to throw this game away, but I would be shocked if there is a lot that's shown on film over the next few weeks from the New England Patriots. So you might be in a situation where a lot of inflated prices coming in, but a lot of close-to-the-vest style played from the New England Patriots. 17, just a monster
no reason,
number here.
For New England, as you said, to kind of tip their hand as to what they might be looking to do in the postseason. Double-digit favorites this year in the NFL, paying, I believe, at last check with Atlanta covering against San Francisco and Buffalo getting the window against Cleveland. I think it's up to 8-3 against the spread. So that age-old adage, you take double digits whenever you can, kind of throw that out the window, but this spot may be a little bit different. Titans-Jaguars playoff implications on the line. Jacksonville, of course, will have an interim coach on the sidelines. You're looking at the Titans, a 4.5-point favorite at BetOnline. Total there, 43.5. This game up a full point from a look-ahead number that had the Titans listed as a 3.5-point favorite.
They shit-can Gus Bradley before the flight home, which is very awkward.
They didn't let him fly home with the team. They did, I believe.
They didn't?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. That's what I'm saying. That's why this was awkward. You couldn't have waited to got back to the team facility in Jacksonville. I get what the approach was. It was like, hey, we're going to have an interim appointed first thing Monday morning, so there can at least be a game plan intact. So I would think they would announce something today, but if there's not, you're kind of already a day behind in the scheme for this week. We've seen how teams kind of react after a head coach has been fired. Depends on who they appoint. We saw the Rams. I'm not sure they appointed the right guy, but we'll see. For me, there's just a lot of things wavering in this game, so I don't really have
I don't have much either. Just wanted to bring up the fact that we do see a full point adjustment here. Raiders-Colts, an interesting game out west. We're looking at Oakland, a 4-point favorite at BetOnline. Total in this game, 53. Look-ahead number had the Raiders pegged as a 6-point chalk. We know the affinity for the professionals to look to go against Oakland. Oddsmakers making it a little bit more difficult with a 2-point adjustment based on Week 15 results.
This feels like we might have value on Oakland for the first time all
season.
Trust
me, when I looked at this number, I was a little bit surprised that it came out as short. Indy played, I don't want to call it the perfect game against the Minnesota Vikings, but didn't look like the Vikings really brought everything. We know Khalil Mack can live in the backfield, and if there's a team that Oakland can score every time they get the ball against as far as defensive capabilities, I'd imagine the Colts have to be it.
I would think. I saw the open, 52.
Yeah, out 52 to 53 right now at BOL.
Yeah, that was low. So, feels like some potential value there in the Raiders. Reclaiming top of that division, still vying for potentially the number one overall spot if things fall the right way. So that'll be interesting. This is a game that's going to require a lot of reading, and we'll see if there's kind of that sigh of relief clinching the playoffs for the first time in what, a decade, I believe. So need to do some reading on this one, but the line's a little low at this point. But again, I want to see what the Raiders are going
to
come with here.
And you have to like the fact that the Raiders do need to win this game, now in control of their own destiny within the division, knowing that Kansas City will play Denver a day later. A game that, like we said, we'll talk about in greater detail on Thursday. Last but not least, the game to kind of wet your beak on Christmas Day, an age-old rivalry in the AFC North between Baltimore and Pittsburgh. You're looking at the Steelers, a 4.5-point favorite, total 44.5 at BetOnline. Look-ahead number here was 6.5, and over the last couple weeks, we've seen the Ravens' defense struggle. I know where you're headed with this, a major injury to keep your eye on before you even bother handicapping this one.
The look-ahead line was 6.5. Now, it didn't open... No, I shouldn't say. It opened significantly different. It opened 5.5, right? Is that what it is? An hour at 4.5
this morning?
Yeah, there
were some 5.5s out there. Pretty prominent offshore open 4, and there were every number iteration in between.
Yeah, and if Jimmy Smith goes, this game has been known to be a war. Baltimore has had some success in it, and that's going to be the key. If Jimmy Smith goes, if you look at some of the breakdowns of his one-on-one matchup with Antonio Brown, usually gets the best of his counterpart at cornerback. That's not the case. So if Jimmy Smith goes, there's probably going to be some value on Baltimore in what amounts to a must-win situation. Probably some value there.
Yeah, this is it in the season. Of course, we'll cover that game in greater detail when some of those injury concerns start to present themselves. Hopefully, we have more intel on Thursday. And Payne, last but not least, on to tonight's game, the Josh Norman Revenge Tour. Carolina, a 7-point underdog for a trip to the nation's capital. Total in this game, 50.5. And as always, the Monday Night Football game brought to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association. You can check out all their great ongoing work for legalization of sports betting at americangaming.org. You can follow them on Twitter at Ammer, A-M-E-R, Gaming, G-A-M-I-N-G-A-S-S-N. It is the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. If you'd like to sign up for their newsletters, encourage you to do so, americangaming.org/about/contact. And Payne, we've seen this number start to move and move quite a bit from where it opened, 4.5 up to 7. A lot of speculation about the health of Cam Newton as he nurses his shoulder injury, Josh Norman against his old team, on-field matchups. Where do we even go to start handicapping this particular?
Well, the first thing first here is, because I know a lot of people don't listen to the first couple minutes of the podcast, they fast forward to the end. I'm going to tell you this. I don't love the game, number one, and that's partly why we're running this contest. I'm not going to give you the answers to the test, so to speak. So we are running a contest today for the 100th episode of Bet the Board. It involves this very game here. You can win $100 cash. You'll have a 100-second Skype interview with Todd and myself and win some free Bet the Board gear. You're going to have to pick. It's called a pick three, basically. You're going to have to pick the side against the spread, the total, and the running back or wide receiver with the most yards and how many. And this is a great game for this contest simply because the tempo, the pace, the style is just worlds apart. And so it's very simple here. If Carolina can control the game and tempo, it's going to be because of the ground. Cam is battling an injury and the season's lost. Is he going to put his body on the line to kind of fuel this ground attack? The market says no. But when you look at this, Washington's defense, 28th in the NFL, they allow 4.5 yards a carry. Through 14 weeks, dead last in the NFL, they allow 55% of runs to be successful. If Carolina has a chance, it's going to be to shorten this game and dictate the style and pace. If Washington wins this game and covers, it's because they've been able to kind of make the game a touch faster, expose that Carolina secondary. They've allowed 7.1 yards per pass attempt. They allow nearly 65% of passes to be completed. And the opposing quarterback has been successful on 49% of pass attempts. That is in the bottom third of the NFL in every passing defensive category. So it's very simple. Carolina needs to run and shorten the game. Washington needs to make this a little bit faster and pass all over that secondary. So I think this makes for a great contest game.
Are you surprised at all with the strength of this move from 4.5 out to 7?
It tells you a couple things. One, there was a very sharp group. They actually laid some 4. It's a group that has a lot of market presence, and I will put an asterisk on that by they haven't been overly successful.
Market presence doesn't always correlate to results. Let's put it that way with this particular group.
So there was sharp money on Washington at 4 from a specific group that has struggled this season. Two, there's some question marks with Cam Newton physically dealing with a little injury. That's what I was saying. If he's going to be willing to run a little bit, we'll see. He's a little bit banged up. It's a game that doesn't mean anything. It's a lost season. But if he kind of puts this on his shoulders in national TV, they're going to have a pretty good chance to run the ball and shorten this game against this Redskins defense. So a lot of variables here. The market says, not only because of this group, but the market, you got to respect it a little bit, that Cam Newton's not going to be 100% healthy for this one. So
perfect game for a contest then. It'll give everybody a little skin in the game free of charge on the Bet the Board dime, as Payne said. 100 bucks cash, 100 seconds Skype chat, which I'm sure Payne people may want to take or leave with us. I never know. Free gift, t-shirt, all sorts of goodies right around the holiday time as you are in a very generous mood, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's very simple. I think you should be following us on Twitter, at BetTheBoardPod, anyways, just for like news, updates. You're going to find out when the podcast releases first to begin with, and I think it's vital. I know there's a large contingency of listeners that just plop it on Sunday morning. By that time, most of the information that we give is going to leak. You need to listen to it as early as possible. So you don't need to be active on Twitter, but you need to just sign up for an account to follow Bet the Board Pod anyways, and that's specific to this contest. There's very simple 2 rules. You have to retweet the contest. It'll be pinned at the top of the Bet the Board page, and you need to be following us on Twitter. So you need a Twitter account to apply for this contest.
The numbers may be on the move. The best way to track that, spend a few bucks, encourage folks, donbest.com, mobile app right to your iPhone or Android. Great specials there. Tweet us at Bet the Board once you sign up for either the gold or platinum package. We'll get you a free month's worth of service to track every line move in real time or on a slight delay, depending on your budget and your expectations as a sports bettor. Payne, another episode in the books. Next time we reconvene, episode 101 for Bet the Board. Who thought we would have lasted as long as we have?
Shocking. And I will just say this, just a little podcast schedule. Thursday, the 22nd, we will be good to go. After that, though, no Monday podcast the day after Christmas. There's just not that many look-ahead lines provided by BetOnline and others for Week 17 with key cogs potentially sitting out meaningless games. There will be a bowl podcast the week after Christmas, either that Tuesday or Wednesday, and then we'll follow it up with our customary Thursday podcast on the 29th for week 17.
The real 17. Reason we're not going to have a podcast on the 26th, it's Boxing Day, and I don't want to be disrupted from any of my EPL actions, so it's okay.
There you go.
For Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter. I encourage you to do so if you already haven't. At Payne Insider, I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there at Todd Furman. As Payne mentioned, follow the Bet the Board Twitter handle at Bet the Board. Best of luck should you choose to invest in Carolina and Washington in a traditional fashion. Best of luck should you partake in the Bet the Board free contest in honor of our 100th episode. And wherever else your gambling takes you, Bulls, college basketball, NBA, NHL, you name it. Best of luck the next few days, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.